Thanks, Nathan. Morning, everybody. Welcome to Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Julia Marchiari Alexander has been the director of the Walters Art Museum since 2013. She has, in the eyes of many, enlivened the museum considerably and has imagined a host of new ways to engage people and to connect them to this storied institution. Several weeks ago, for example, you could go to the Walters for a whiskey tasting. The museum's popular hackathons have drawn thousands of software techies. And on Sunday, the Walters will attempt to set a Guinness World Record for the longest game of telephone. More than 1,300 people will form a gigantic line through the museum's various galleries and pass a message from one person to the next. Well, the message that Julia Marchiari Alexander is sending to Baltimore is clear. She wants everyone from all corners of our community to feel welcome and to delight in all that the museum has to offer. She joins me this morning in Studio A. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Tom. It's fabulous to be here today.
So I'm putting words in your mouth where I'm saying that, you know, you want to welcome everybody from all corners of the community.
Just keep going. That's fine.
Right. But, you know, these kumbaya moments are easier to actually attain than they are to, you know, think about or aspire to. It's just simply easier said than done. I mean, the Walters can be seen by some as a really distant planet from Sandtown Winchester or Harlem Park. How do you address that? What is the role of the Walters in the community at large?
So I got here in April 2013, and I just want to give you a shout out. You were my very, very first appointment as the director of the Walters
Art Museum. I made you late to work on your first day.
And, well, I counted this as a fun start to the work, so maybe that's why I'm doing all these interesting things with the team that I work with. But we really at the Walters believe that the museum has to be a transformative force in the region. And unlike a performing arts organization that can go out into the community and have a concert or do a drama interpretation with the folks in various parts of the community, we have to think about ways that the great works of art from all across the globe and all from, you know, from all time, really from 5500 before the Common Era, that's a long, long time ago. So how do these works of art relate to us today? And while we are free, and while we are open, and I hope people enjoy coming to us, that's not enough. So what we want to do is, through our collections and grounded in our collections, inspire people to have conversations with each other about their own experiences. Sometimes that each other is maybe even just with yourself. And to find yourself in something unusual, in a Chinese porcelain. How does that relate to me? So what we really want to do is inspire conversations based in these great works of art that do have to do with the themes of today, that do have to do with the history of humanity, good and bad, that do reveal the way that we have across the globe lived in a pluralistic society forever. And it's not a new moment that we are encountering, mm-hmm. but how can we use that to shape the future?
So give me an example of how a Chinese porcelain does relate to me or to a 15-year-old kid from Sandtown or to a 70-year-old widow from, you know, East Baltimore. I mean, how does it?
So what did you have your coffee in this morning?
A 5th-century Chinese porcelain coffee cup. No. I stole it from Nathan.
Yeah, right. But what was it made of?
Yeah, I assume porcelain.
Porcelain, ceramic. Mm-hmm. When you were little, did you ever make a ceramic? Did you stick your hand in the sand and it became a kind of a ceramic piece that you gave to your mother? Porcelain is a way of treating the earth and turning that into something other, transforming it. So we at the Walters have this amazing collection of works made by Chinese artists that came out of the earth, that came out of the sometimes the Chinese earth, sometimes other earth from other places. But usually what went on them were images of sometimes their own culture, but sometimes the culture of another moment. So now there are contemporary artists working in ceramics, dealing with their own culture in the imagery on the ceramics. And so putting that next to a ceramic from second century after the Common Era from China is really interesting because it's the same process that the artist has engaged in now and then using the same material. But these works are divided by centuries, divided by cultures, divided by time. So not only do they reveal the difference, but they also reveal the commonalities. And, you know, sometimes the most interesting thing is what we think about all the time is trade and globalism. You know, the Chinese kind of made it in the modern world in the 17th and 18th century by selling their wares to France. And then you get these crazy things where you have a beautiful Chinese porcelain fish vase that Madame de Pompadour buys and has her gilt artists put gilding on the outside. So in our Madame de Pompadour exhibition that closes in 2 weeks, nice shameless plug, we have some amazing French porcelains that want to be Chinese. And then we have some Chinese porcelains that were transformed into French porcelains. So it's all about image making and using the wares that are from your culture, but transforming them into an other culture. So
Dr. Julia Marchiari Alexander is the director of the Walters Art Museum. It's Marilyn Morning. I'm Tom Hall. You came 2 years before the uprising, the violence that we experienced last year, and now it's a year later. When the climate in our city changes, as it has clearly changed, what's the role of an institution like the Walters, or for that matter, the BMA, or you know, Center Stage, or the Baltimore Symphony? There's some who perhaps would make the argument that the best thing about these, you know, revered, storied institutions is that they simply stay constant. You know, the Walters has been around through World War One, through World War Two, through Vietnam, through, you know, you name it, it's been through. So when the tumult in society happens, there's an argument that says it's good to have institutions like the Walters that are steady as a rock.
Right.
But there are others who say, oh, we got to change and we have to adapt what we're doing to fit into this new society, this new culture in this new climate.
That's right. And I think both of those are exactly right. In the day, on the day after, in the morning we woke up after the uprising, we went into work and the staff were all there and we signed our partnership with Morgan State University, a historic partnership between the Walters Art Museum and Morgan. And we then opened the next day and were open. We were the only cultural institution, I think, that was actually doors wide open. And we had a number of people come seeking solace very much in the same way, or maybe they were even seeking business as usual. But they, in the same way that we talked
about, the return to normalcy became such an important parameter.
Right,
that
keep going, but change your path. And I think that's where we are. And I believe, again, you know, we're a place that in some ways you have to come to interact. But that's also the beauty of it. It has such a sense of place. And it was really a beautiful moment that the week after the uprising, the trustees and the staff presented together a new strategic vision for the museum that we were working on even before. But this idea that we have to be of Baltimore and we have to engage in the stories of Baltimore, we have to engage in the world in which we live more than maybe, you know, being an international art scene leader. That's great, but 70% of our audiences are from this state, from this region, from this county. So how can we be relevant to them?
And so that's a challenge, it seems to me, for the Walters in a way that perhaps it's not as much a challenge for some of the other institutions. Like, for example, the BMA, which has a large collection of contemporary art, and you don't specialize in contemporary art. You go way, way, way back. But they can have exhibitions of contemporary artists. You know,
right.
You can have people from Baltimore and put their stuff on the walls and on the pedestals. You can't do that. I mean, but there are things you can do that they can't as well.
So some of the ways that we are thinking about and that we spoke about 3 years ago was, how do you enliven that kind of collection that's perceived as historic? One of the ways that we've tried to do that is to stop talking about how we got the stuff as a historic enterprise. In some funny way, the Walters were among the greatest collectors of contemporary art in their time. So just turning the conversation a little bit to be saying, why was this so interesting to them in their own time? And I know this annoys some of the more scholarly of my colleagues, but you know, if you think about film and movies, what the Henry Walters and William Walters were collecting, they were really collecting the movies. They were collecting Finding Nemo. They were collecting, American Sniper. They weren't collecting Birdland or, you know, the fabulous kind of avant-garde films. The works that we have are representers of a society and their visual culture at the most establishment. So then as we invite people in for conversations around our works, I think we can say, you know, so do you like Birdland or do you like American Sniper? And this is how these works were to our founders,
yeah,
as
and provoke that conversation.
Yeah. Right.
Interesting. All right. Well, we will have more of this conversation after a break for news. So stick around. I appreciate your being here. Dr. Julia Marchari Alexander, she's the director of the Walters Art Museum. It's Maryland Morning. Plenty more coming up. Stay with us.
Is there an issue that you'd like to see us cover? Let us know. You can email us at mdmorning@wypr.org, or you can leave us a voicemail. Just call 410-881-3162. Visit us on the web to leave comments or to hear previous episodes. That's all at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, on with the show.
And welcome back. It is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, it's pledge drive here at WIPR. Actually, the pledge drive has been underway for a little while now, but you might not have noticed because we haven't been doing it in the usual way. This is our first ever non-interruptive fundraiser. Instead of breaking into the programs you love, we're just reminding you once in a while in regular station breaks to do your part. So could this be the future of pledge drives? Well, maybe. But only you help make this a success. Pledge online at WIPR.org. Your gift of $10 a month will get you the cool new WIPR t-shirt. You can catch pictures of it when you become a member at WIPR.org. So if you're just joining me, my guest is the director of the Walters Art Museum, Dr. Julia Marchari Alexander. She took over the reins of the Walters at a time when the arts community had begun something of a generational shift. 3 years ago, she succeeded the Walters director, Gary Vicon, who had been there for 27 years. And then in 2014, Sammy Hoy succeeded Fred Lazarus as the president of MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art. Fred has been an influential leader in Baltimore for 38 years. And 2 weeks ago, the Baltimore Museum of Art announced that Christopher Bedford would succeed Doreen Bolger, who had headed the BMA for 17 years. So, Julia, this changing of the guard, you could even add to that Paul Meacham, who's the executive director of the Baltimore Symphony. He's going to be leaving at the end of this season. And my organization, the Choral Arts Society, after next year, for the first time, will have a smart person running that because I'm retiring as well. So, what does this mean, do you think, that there is this whole new influx of people heading the major arts organizations here in town? I mean, do you sense that this is a moment? Do you sense that this is a time where we can really have a sort of paradigm shift and just do something different?
I do. And I'm just so excited that, first of all, I know Chris, and I think he's just terrific.
It's Chris Bedford who's going to take over the BMA.
Exactly. So I'm going to see him this weekend. And we're really excited together to move into this new phase for our two museums. But what I think is so exciting is you hear a lot about how difficult it is to bring people to Baltimore. Well, that's not true. We are hiring. We are bringing great talent to the city. And this doesn't just represent a sort of changing of the guard. It represents adding a value to the community, because Fred and Gary and Doreen, you know, Paul's going to Utah, but he's still part of our community. You, thank goodness, are still going to be around. So what I see is it's really a building of the cultural community rather than any kind of loss. And it's adding, it's adding value, but it's also adding some outside expertise. One of the things that happens in places where you have, and it usually happens in universities, where people stay for a long time because they love it, is that you become ever more kind of centered, but you also risk becoming ever more insular. So bringing all of these amazing minds, and I'm not counting myself necessarily in that, but I'll throw my hat in the ring.
You're allowed. Yeah. Yep.
Not taking anything for granted. Bringing all of these amazing experiences from other places is actually, I think, going to be part of the game changer for Baltimore that is going to allow us to actually accomplish what we need to accomplish. And that is thinking about ourselves in a different way, being extremely proud of what we do here, which is, and proud of the things that are good here. Yes, there are incredibly difficult situations and tragic situations that we have to face, but the people who are coming and the people who are here have selected to be here. And I've actually last year I recruited a deputy director for art and program who now says in many ways that the fact that her recruitment was going on during the week after the uprising, she said that was what convinced her to come, because there is meaning in our work here in a way that I think is unique and interesting. And yeah.
So when you talk about thinking of ourselves in a different way in terms of the arts institutions and organizations, what does that actually mean? I mean, sometimes we fall into this rhetorical pattern, mm-hmm. that we've used these terms, you know, we've mm-hmm. talked about celebrating diversity.
Right.
We've talked about, you know, thinking in new ways and stuff. And sometimes it just becomes rhetorical repetition. And
right.
I wonder what that actually means.
Right.
So what does it actually mean?
So one of the things that museums have been doing for a while now that's really interesting is looking at their buildings as objects that they need to turn their expertise to. So looking at your historic buildings as works that need to be interpreted, displayed, and preserved in the same way. We at the Walters are beginning to do that, and are really excited about some new announcements that we'll be making in the next few weeks about the ways in which we're going to be treating our new buildings, primarily focused on One West Mount Vernon, which is, you know, commonly known as the Hackerman House. And while it would be really easy, and many museums have done it, just to look at them in the same way that they look at that Chinese porcelain vase, what we now need to do is think about the people who lived in those buildings and the people who have made those buildings, who were from many, many different kinds of lifestyles. You know, Mount Vernon was a place where there were enslaved people living in those homes. So as we look at our buildings as works of art, we also need to look at them as places where lives were lived that are reflective of many of the histories that we're still grappling with and dealing with. So not only is it how do we ask questions of our objects, but also how do we ask questions of the place that we are in a different way? And that's not getting rid of this notion that the museum's business is to collect, preserve, interpret, and display great works of art, but it's turning that a little bit on its head and allowing the conversations to be around the people and the stories of the people who have been involved in that enterprise. And that is what we need to hold ourselves accountable to.
Dr. Julia Marchari Alexander is the director of the Walters Art Museum. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Speaking of stories, you have an event coming up on Sunday in which you're going to attempt to set the Guinness World Record for the longest game of telephone. And folks will remember that telephone is, you know, I tell you a story and then you tell that story to somebody else and that person tells it to another person, et cetera, et cetera. And you're going to go down the line to about 1,300 people to sort of see how that story changes. Well, the story of Baltimore certainly has changed in recent years. And of course, it's evolved, you know, since the Walters was founded by Henry and William Walters back in the day. How's this event going to work on Sunday? Why this? It's really interesting when you talk about bringing people to the building. That's going to bring a crowd, isn't it?
Right. We hope 1,331 people, to be exact. So please sign up. It should be really fun. It's an artistic performance. It's been masterminded by the artist Lexi Mountain. And she has mapped out a route within the museum through all of our collection galleries, or as many of them as necessary. And she has worked with the curatorial team and the education team and the conservation team, our program teams, to devise a message that will be revealed to the first person in line on Sunday, but one that is rooted in the collections that has to do precisely with what you're saying, that metaphor of what can the museum do to connect with our histories and our stories, but also this notion that the messages do change and that every interpretation is different. There's no one voice that goes on in a museum. You know, there is not one art history. There is not one collection. And the beauty of the Walters collection is that there's so many different types of objects that speak to the different ways that we use art, the different ways that we make art. And it's not just a bunch of paintings on a white wall.
Yeah. And it'll be fascinating to see how that story changes 1,331 people later.
Exactly. And I hope it's not that long sentence that I just created.
So you don't know what the sentence is either.
I do not. I do not. I love the aspiration and the hope, though. I always talk about that Breck commercial when I was little of and so on and so on and so on. And the hopefulness that we were going to remember Breck at the end of it. But I guess 40 years later, I still do.
You're still remembering. So that's a good sign. It's interesting that, you know, obviously a museum is an opportunity for folks to make sense of the world by looking at what has been preserved from the past. And when you think about collectors like William and Henry Walters, who was the father and who was the son?
The father was William and the son was Henry.
Mm-hmm. And they were both these collectors. But they were like the other people who collected at that time, they were the 1% of their of their time, extremely wealthy. There may be even more income and wealth inequality now than there was at the time of the Walters. You know, there's a lot of people making that argument. Do you worry about, we live in a world in which everybody is forward focused. You know, there's this notion that we've got to look ahead. We've got to go on to the next thing. So, as a place that's all about preserving history and preserving what we know from the past, do you worry that the forward focus of contemporary society is going to somehow, you know, attenuate the effectiveness of an organization like the Walters?
I don't worry about it, but I have to confront it every day. And I think that my conviction has borne itself out that it is important to use the past to inform the present and particularly to shape the future. And I think our past exhibition on Pearls on a String, which looked at Islamic art and culture from the 15th century to the 17th century, you know, a very, very, by all accounts, arcane subject. So if you went out on the street and you said, do you care about that? A small percentage of people would say yes, and or a small percentage of people would even understand what you're talking about from all walks of society. And yet we had such an incredible group of people who came to that show precisely because it was looking at something from the past that had deep ramifications for our contemporary society. So it looked at pluralism and, you know, how different societies and different people in one society lived with each other and celebrated each other and confronted each other. And when we asked visitors at the end what they came out of it with, many, many of them said a better understanding of how you live in a society with people other than those who look like or who come from your group. And to me, that's what's so powerful about something like that. You can take something that seems unimportant to the many and make it so. And I just love that work. So I guess it should worry me, but I've been accused of being a Pollyanna forever, so I only ever look at the opportunities and the challenges.
That's right. There's no such thing as a problem. It's all just an opportunity. I understand you have a exhibition or something to do with recycling coming up at the Walters Art Museum. That's, I would not have guessed, recycling is on your docket.
Recycling in the medieval world. So
I thought they just threw it in the river.
Exactly. That kind of forward focus. We're just going to throw it in the river. No, this is one of our exhibitions that really is drawn entirely from our collection. And it focuses on how the ways in which artists and people reused materials from the past. So there will be a Limoges enamel that has been made from Roman glass. So glass that was thousands of years old was reused, melted down and reused to make a contemporary work of art for the church. There are some other works that really transform the old into the new, and it's going to be so exciting. But again, one of the things that I love about the Walters team is they are using groups from the community. So we're partnering with the Baltimore Jewelry Center and doing a group of make nights, which is when you can make art with a glass of wine or a cocktail in your hand in our classrooms, our wet classrooms. And there's one opportunity where you can make jewelry out of recycled materials. And then I learned a word yesterday, plarn, which is plastic yarn, plarn.
Plarn.
And we are going to be making recycled or bags out of plarn. So all those bags you have in your house, you can bring them and
we can plarn them.
Plarn them in our Thursday evening events.
Because you have this Thursday at the Walters. I mean, you do serve wine. You have these make nights. Maybe, I suppose if somebody has enough wine, it becomes a make out night. You know, I mean, and I mean, you're bringing people in to do stuff other than just look at the art.
Right.
I mean, does it worry that sometimes they'll go to the Walters and have a few drinks and have a lot of fun and not actually and sort of ignore the exhibitions or ignore the stuff?
We have not found that is the case. Mm-hmm. We are free and open all the time. So as I always say, I'm happy for you to just come in and use the facilities for air conditioning or for bathroom or for a drink. But I can guarantee you that you're going to have an exceptional experience when you encounter a work of art.
And how do you encounter a work of art? How do you look at a painting? I mean, like, I know how to listen to a song, or I know how to read a book. I sometimes know how to interpret a poem. I think I'm pretty bad at looking at a painting. When you look at an image, how do you understand it?
It's a different enterprise every single time. And some of the most meaningful moments I have ever had were unexpected. You know, looking at something I thought I wouldn't like, a marine painting, or looking at a sculpture from another culture that I had absolutely no interest in. But then I just got pulled in by the sheer work of the way that the artist has burnished the metal. Or my favorite moment was looking at a portrait of someone that it came alive. And when I was standing, it hung at exactly my eye level. And all of a sudden, I was in a conversation with that person. It was, you know, whenever people say, well, the eyes follow you, sometimes they do, actually. And so while I can tell you how, from a professional perspective, learning to look will help you become a better visual consumer of the TV ad that you're being taken advantage of by. What I think is special is really when you have that moment of wonder in front of a work. And I can't tell you how to do that. And it's going to happen to you without your knowing
it. Without any tutelage. Right.
Exactly. Right. We saw that with Prince, right?
Yeah,
it was just all of a sudden people were remembering their moments of wonder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's always good to see it. Thank you so much. And break a leg this weekend with the telephone game. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll see you all at the Walters.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Julia Marchiari Alexander is the director of the Walters Art Museum. On Sunday, the Walters will attempt to set a new Guinness World Record for the longest game of telephone. Registration to be in the 1,300-plus person line starts at 10 o'clock Sunday morning. And if you'd like to be part of it, come to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. We'll provide a link with the details. It is Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Coming up after a break for the news, the great jazz clarinetist and band leader Todd Marcus joins me to talk about a concert he's playing tomorrow night. But first, it's Friday. That means we get the treat of a Baltimore story with Gil Sandler.